Right, I have got a classroom load here in front of me who I'm really looking forward to this. I really am. I think this might be a first. I really do, here on BBC Radio Solent. Here's the Friday Social. We've had some really special ones recently, some fantastic themes, farmers themes, we've had student themes, we get influencers from the South. But this afternoon, I have a classroom full of head teachers. Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Are you going to be well behaved,
guys?
No.
Very. What happens if we're not?
Oh, well, you'll be coming to. I've got an office room that you'll be coming to. And it'll be detention for you. Oh, that's Sarah over there. Right, let me introduce you. My guests here on the Friday Social this afternoon. Then they are all heads of schools from the South. Sharon Morton is head teacher of Binstead C of E Primary School. Hello, good afternoon, Sharon.
Hi, Lucy.
We've got Sarah here with us, who is head teacher of Egger School in Alton.
Good afternoon.
And we have got Jane Gandy, who is head teacher of St Swithin's School in Winchester. Hello.
Hi, Lucy.
And we have got Tim Webber, who is head teacher at Testwood School in Southampton.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
Lucy.
Now, people have been asking me, are you going to call them by their surname or are you going to call them by their first? I mean, what are we doing here? I'm just putting it out there.
First names.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Fine. What is it like? What is it like when you are the top person? You are right at the top of the school. You are leading that school. So much responsibility falls on your head. That, you know, I don't think that's easy. Sharon, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, no, it's a unique position because you have to be sort of responsible to everyone and everyone's responsible to you. And I think that the most important thing is you realise that actually you have all these young lives depending upon you for their outcomes. So it's a big responsibility, but it's a joy, actually. Mm.
Jane from St Swithin's.
I think I'd say the same thing, but I think the responsibility really lies in creating the best possible environment for your young people and for yourself and for the parents. So I think something, I'm sure we all share this, kind of the power of fun is important. So to try and create the most positive place for the kids to be.
And how many kids is that? How many kids have you got?
We've got just over 500 in our senior school and 250 in our prep school, our primary school.
Okay, Tim, you are Testwood School in Southampton. How many kids is that?
Nearly 900.
Wow. That's 900 people that you are responsible for.
And the staff. Don't forget the staff.
And staff. How many staff?
120, something like that.
Right.
Yeah. So it is a big responsibility to keep everything flowing as it should be operationally, mm-hmm. but also, yeah, the responsibility to improve students' lives is ultimately at the end of the day.
Do you feel sometimes that you need two Tims or three Tims, you know, because there's so much going on?
I feel blessed with the team I've got. I've got some very, very good people. So, yeah, no, I'm OK.
Sarah, what about you? Egger School in Alton. How many kids are there at the school?
So we've got about 860 students at Eggers. And I think it's certainly one of those jobs where you get home in the evening and you're asked, oh, how was your day? And you just think, how am I possibly going to explain everything that's happened throughout the course of the day? And for me, it's my first year of headship. Tim and I know each other from the Hampshire programme for new heads. And certainly that's been quite a shift from what we were doing previously to this year. But something I always think about in education is the very principles that you operate using in the classroom. Back 24 years ago when I started being a teacher, the motivation for doing what I do, the values, the reason why I do it, all the different things I've done throughout education, it's always been the same. Those things haven't gone away. We're doing it now in a bigger sphere of influence. We're doing it now with greater responsibility and accountability. But the actual fundamental principles of what you're doing day in and day out don't really change. And that's why I would say being a new head feels strangely familiar and really natural to me, as well as being a first in so many ways.
Well, it should do, because it runs in the family. Your brother's a head as well.
My brother is a head, yes.
But he's at an independent school.
He is, yeah.
Yeah.
And so very different. And for me as well, I started in the state system, my own education. I then went to private. My brother was a scholar and so was I. And we had that experience. And then when it came to that point of, you know, training to teach and wanting to be a teacher myself, for me, I really wanted to get back to that state school.
Mm. Jane, how do you not take your work home? That's the thing, because Sarah touched on that. You've got to sort of offload. You know, you might have a really rubbishy day. And you have to go home and be mum or whatever, partner or...
I mean, you're absolutely right. When my children were a little bit younger, of course, the minute you walk through the door, you can't think about work. And now they're a little bit older, I'm a runner. And so I find that if you're running, particularly if you're running in a race, it's so painful that you cannot think about anything else. So I think just having some sort of hobby, something beyond school, is really helpful.
Yeah, to take your mind off. Sharon, Binstead's CV Primary School. Let's talk about parents. What advice would you give to parents who are looking around prospective schools, especially I'd say with primary schools, mm-hmm. there's probably more options, aren't there? You know, yeah. compared to secondary schools.
And I also think for primary, for often parents starting in their 4-year-olds, their first experience of education, so it's such a big thing, such a big worry. But I always say to parents who come around that they're very lucky because all the schools in Alton's are good schools. But I say actually the most important thing is your child is happy and secure. And when you as a parent are looking around a school, you need to think, visualise, can I see my child being happy here? Because if your child's happy, learning's going to take place. And to me, that's crucially the first starting point.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. And like question-wise, Tim from Testwood, what sort of, you know, if you're looking around, what questions should you be asking? What should you be looking for in a school?
I think the, although probably all our schools do it, we have an open evening, but that tends to be a bit of a show. I suppose what you really want to see is you want to have the conversations with the staff, and the students are perhaps the best ambassadors of the school. You get a real flavour of a school from talking to the students, but also ask to go and see the school in action during the school day, and then you'll get a really good flavour for it.
Is it a show? So are you putting on your best students to go walk around the parents too? Is that you like, oh, right, we'll plant these ones so it looks good?
All our students are great, what you're saying, Lucy.
And I think that's really good advice, actually. It is a show, isn't it? That kind of you've carefully planned that day, and it's kind of orchestrated, but actually that's not a real day at your school,
no.
is it? Okay. Jane, what about you? I mean, independent school, St Swithin's. You must get people from where do your pupils come from?
Well, we're a day and we're a boarding school. So some of our students are from, are international students. They might come to us from Hong Kong or Nigeria, for example, or France or Germany. And then local from Winchester, and then from London, we have boarders who come down from London or somewhere like that as well.
Yeah, okay. And how for you, you're a single, you're a female school, aren't you? Girls' school.
Yeah.
What is that like being, you know, what, I mean, what's that experience for the pupils being at a single sex school? What do they say the advantages and disadvantages of that are?
I think for our students, one of the things they really like is that there are no preconceptions about how girls should behave. So we have as many girls choosing chemistry as we do. In fact, more girls choose chemistry, for example, at A-level than choose English. And so in terms of the way that all the roles they have in the school, those are very much, they can do anything. They can be the leaders. They can be the class clown. They can do whatever it is. Whereas I think sometimes in a current environment, it might be, girls might be called bossy when actually they're just a leader. And so I think it's very freeing for the girls to just have the opportunity to do what they like, behave how is natural to them, rather than there being any sort of unspoken kind of bias or unspoken preconceptions about what they should do.
But then how do you get that natural meeting of girls and boys at some point in their life and make sure it is natural? You know, because obviously they're blossoming in their education, but in real life, you know, it's not just men and women. It might be easier if it was, but you know.
I think one of the things that I always say to our students is, whoever you meet beyond this school, they're just people. Boys are just people, men are just people, we're all people. And sometimes, you know, in the press really likes to say all boys are like this, all girls are like this, and the same for men and women. But actually there's a whole range of people. Some people are shy, and that could be boys or girls, and vice versa. So I talk about that. And then of course we do meet other people from other schools.
Well, you mix with other schools.
We do quite a lot of things at Winchester College, for example, which has mostly boys at the moment.
Okay. Sarah, let me go back to the question for Eggers, actually. So for parents, they're looking around Eggers School in Alton. What should you look for? What advice, you know, how do you get a feel that this is the school for you?
I think what you're thinking about, I mean, I'm a parent myself, so I know the sorts of questions that I've had throughout my children's education. And a really important thing is finding the right fit for your child and knowing your child and knowing the environment that will work for them. And really, you've got to get parents across the threshold, and you want to. If you're a parent, I'd say go and ask to meet the head teacher. I think Tim's absolutely right. The students are the best ambassadors for schools. They will tell you what you really want to know. And I think really having conversations about ethos, about family, values, what's your vision? Lots of parents talk to me as I'm new about where do you want to take the school? What's the next phase in the school's journey? And being able to hear a head teacher talk about that with passion and confidence is really important when you're making those decisions.
Is now the time to tell you, Sarah, that my other half went to Eggers?
in Alton.
Depends who it is, I'd say.
Don't worry, this was centuries ago. It really was centuries ago. And he didn't have a good time.
Yeah.
He was made to feel that he didn't excel in anything.
Yeah.
He went back later and then sort of walked through the corridors and sort of shuddered as he went through there. He was like, ooh.
Yeah, and that's a real shame. Would say, fundamentally for me, if you ask about what education is about, it's about making young people feel successful and experience success,
and
whatever that is.
Yeah.
And that clearly hasn't happened there.
Yeah.
And that is disappointing, because we are here as educators to make all young people feel that they have something to contribute, they can make a positive contribution to the world around them, and they can excel. And you find me a child, from the beginning of teaching to now, find me a child that isn't good at something, that can't find that thing that ignites their passion and makes them successful.
Yeah, you're all nodding. Yeah. Does someone want to follow up on
that? It's absolutely true. And I often say to actually staff that if you can't find one thing that you like about a child and one thing that child excels about, you're in the wrong profession. Because as Sarah said, we're here to enable our young children to be successful, and in order to do that they need to be confident individuals. Mm-hmm. And it's crucial to what we do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'd add to that in the sense that experiencing success helps students to feel like they belong at school. Yeah. And we know that schools are really important for students. We had our year 11 leavers assembly yesterday, and everybody turned up for it, it was such an important thing for them. And I stood on the gate and shook their hands as they left, and I could tell it was quite an emotional experience, not shaking my hand, but actually just that walking out the gate for the last time. And it's really important. But it all goes back to students feeling like they belong, and that's really, really important. And I think that's something that's been damaged as a result of COVID. Mm-hmm. And that whole sort of contract with schools has been changed, and we can see that in falling attendance and things like that. Mm-hmm. So, it's really, really important, going back to that essential point that students experience success. It's really important.
Mm-hmm. I'm loving my chat so far. Right, this is the Friday Social. This is BBC Radio Solent. That was Tim Webber, who is head of Tesworth School in Southampton. We've got Jane Gandy, who is head of St Swithin School in Winchester. Sarah Holman, head of Eggers School in Alton. And Sharon Morton, who is head of Binstead C of E Primary School. More chat from them here on BBC Radio Solent, here on the Friday Social. Join in, by the way. I'd love to hear from you. WhatsApp 08000 321 333. Put Solent at the front of any message. BBC Radio Solent Friday afternoon for my Friday social, where my guests are... Sit up straight, please, everybody, here in the room. It is my Friday social. We're having a laugh because I've got four heads of schools from the South here with me this afternoon. Fascinating chat about education and what life is like in schools at the moment in 2024 in the South. We have got Sarah Holman, who is head of Eggers School in Alton. We have got Jane Gandhi, who is head of St Swithin School in Winchester, head of Binstead C of B Primary School. Sharon Morton is here. And Tim Webber is here from Testwood School in Southampton. Tim, we talked about the size of your school. I mean, it's an enormous school, over 900 pupils at your school. How do you, in terms of education, how do you educate the individual when there's 30 of them in the classroom? You know, how do you, can't cater to everyone, can
you? Well, that is the challenge. That's the ultimate challenge that we're all wrestling with every single day. If children learned what we taught them, it'd be really easy. The learning process is very, very difficult, and it's difficult for every child, different for every child in the classroom. Mm-hmm. So there are various tricks and strategies that we use to make sure that at the end of every lesson that all students have learned, you know, what they needed to learn, the most important things. Mm-hmm. Some will have learned more, some will have, and would have gone on further. But that's the aim. But it is difficult, you know, and we've got, you know, lots of resources, including extra staff that we can deploy to help us do that.
Yeah, okay. Sarah, do I want to bring you in here from Eggers in Alton? Again, there's 30, over 30 people in your classroom. How are you going to educate you've got 33 individuals there. How are you going to educate the individual?
Oh, I was just going to say, it really does come down to that high quality teacher and, you know, the training that you put in place for your members of staff for how to get to know the children in front of them. And we talk a lot at Eggers about every child known. That is a big ambition, but it is the right ambition, because in order for children to be successful, as we've talked about earlier, you need to know how to get them there. And you can challenge them and you can put out that high expectation ahead of them, but it's the strategies in the classroom day in, day out, the checking, the building of knowledge, the building of skills, the transferring of skills across the curriculum beyond the classroom. Mm. All of those things are so important in helping to understand how that individual learns and connecting with them. The power of connection in the classroom is paramount.
Jane, let me bring you in, because Jane, St Swithin School, independent school from Winchester, do you have smaller classrooms then? Is there, we're talking about a 30 plus in some of these schools. Is it different at your school? How does it work?
We do tend to have smaller classes. Typically, we'd probably have about 20 in a class. So, it is, we're very lucky to have that, for sure.
Yeah, okay. And let me ask about primary school then, Sharon, C of E primary school. Okay, right. You're a small village school. You've got different ages in different years.
We have.
How are you going to make that work then?
Well, again, it's sort of similar to what the secondary school colleagues are saying. It's all about knowing your child, knowing the learner, and having the skills and strategies in order to improve that learning. But I think it's careful deployment of adults who are supporting the children, as well as within primary, use lots of practical concrete resources so that children actually really get to understand a concept before moving on. And I also sort of think as well, particularly in primary school, that, you know, they will all get there, you know, providing a child that obviously hasn't got specified additional special needs, those children will get there. You know, some children, you know, are excellent at sports, some children get reading, some children struggle a little bit with maths, but at the end of it, we'll have that rounded individual, because it's more than just the academic achievement. We want the highest for our children, but I also want them to be rounded individuals alongside that, with that emotional intelligence as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we've all heard about classrooms being disruptive. How do you deal with that? That is the reality, isn't it? Obviously, you've got the theory and this is how it's going to work and we're going to get great teachers. But you know, out of all your children, there's disruptive children out there. And you know, my kids have come home and said, oh, that was so annoying. You know, I couldn't learn today because blah, blah, blah. And then they tell you the scenario. It's obviously from their point of view.
Yeah. The word disruptive children is not really disruptive children, they're dysregulated children, children who are struggling because of their special needs on the whole, with their learning, struggling to access something because of their special needs, whether it's dyslexia or dyscalculia or ASD. So it's, you know, that's part of the skill of us being head teachers, to say to parents on both sides, yes, we understand, but there's a child here with needs, and it's our job to support all children. So it's not easy, you know, the bottom line of it.
Tim?
Yeah, we use a phrase that all sort of behaviour is a form of communication. So if a child is being disruptive, it's coming from somewhere, and our job is to locate that and address the issues that are contributing to that behaviour, while at the same time trying to minimise the impact on other people in the class.
That's a lot of work.
Yes,
you've
it
got
is.
There. I mean, where do you even start with that? Sarah, do you want me to bring you in here?
Yeah, I'm just thinking from a head teacher point of view, you've just got to be so clear on the time of the purpose of school. You know, school is the place where children come to learn. They should be free of distraction and disruption. And that motivation to get that classroom culture right day in, day out is really important. We talk about calm and purposeful learning environments. We talk about teachers having to be persistent and insistent with kindness day in, day out. Children don't always know. They need behaviour to be modelled to them. They need good examples of what it looks like. We need to train children, not make assumptions that they've seen it before. And with that comes very, very clear systems. You talk about how do you make that work across a whole school community. Mm. It has to be underpinned by clear, simple behaviour systems that children understand. They understand that you're putting those systems in place because you believe they can do it and because you're supporting them to get there.
OK, and what if you haven't got the support of the parents? Because that's going to be really difficult.
Within the school environment, we enforce the messages of what good behaviour looks like. We take responsibility for that. And the training that we put in during the school day and the opportunity we have to maximise and make the most of that. We can't be responsible for what goes on when they leave our school gates. But that real urgency of now in getting it right for our young people and using the skills that we have to show them and script for them sometimes. There are consequences if this happens. It isn't that things just go your way. Giving them those skills is actually what education's about how to be a citizen.
I just wanted to say something about parents, really. We've been reflecting on the facts at school recently. I mean, you said sometimes parents aren't very supportive, and I think we've been thinking about how when you're a parent, your child is kind of very dear to you, and it sort of pushes all sorts of buttons, and we've been trying really hard to try and understand what might make our parents a bit, kind of perhaps cross with the school or whatever it is, but it's coming from a place of concern. They're either, worried about they're worried about their child. And so I think trying to work out a way to problem solve with the parents often kind of brings them on board in a way that, sort of a few weeks ago might not have seemed very likely.
And we talk about working in partnership. That's what you're saying. Yeah. Actually, let's not work in isolation of parents. Let's try and engage and work in partnership with them. Mm.
All this is quite tiring for teachers, isn't it? Because they're going to the classroom and they just want to captivate and engage the child, and they want to have this good relationship. And sometimes it's difficult, isn't it? And then they've got to go and sort that out. And that's quite wearing on the teacher, isn't it? Anyone?
But if processes are in place that are workable and they are realistic for a teacher within a school community, I would say it's more exhausting going into environments where you're not able to teach. You don't know what to do when something happens, who to turn to. If you build supportive, cohesive teams of people with clear, strong messaging about what is acceptable and how that's going to work for the benefit of the child, that is less of an exhaustion than some of the day-to-day and some of those other environments.
Tim, Tesswood?
I was going to say that we use the phrase that behaviour management is more of an M25 than an M3. You have to keep doing it daily, every day. And it takes time to really have an impact. And if you stop doing it, it'll unravel quite quickly. So all those little routines that we do, contacting home, speaking to the students, all of those things are absolutely vital.
Yeah, I mean, just touched on teachers there. How do you, because you want to keep those great teachers, don't you?
Absolutely.
Those passionate teachers, those teachers who really bring the classroom alive. How do you keep them, how do you keep them passionate? How do you keep the enthusiasm from them and attract more teachers like that?
I think part of it, I suppose, is having the right environment for them to teach in, okay, and making sure that teachers feel supported by the rest of the school. And also part of it's professional development, okay, that we're always improving as teachers. I don't think anybody around the table will say we've completely nailed it, we've got nothing to learn. It is one of those things that you're continually honing your craft and trying to have greater impact all the time.
Mm-hmm. Teachers, how do we get great teachers?
Well, we talked about the values, didn't you? You spoke about belong, Tim, earlier, and our school that, belong, aspire, achieve. And actually that belonging to something, that sense of community, that working with each other, colleagues, side by side, challenging, supporting. We should never be afraid to have our classroom doors open so that we can walk in and out of each other's rooms, offer support when it's needed, have that conversation to one side that's going to make the teacher feel that they can get on with their business, which is to teach and share that curriculum and all the knowledge and skills that come with that.
Jane, since we're in school, can you cherry pick, because essentially they're going to get paid more at private school?
No, necessarily say we can cherry pick at all. I think, you know, as my colleagues have just said here, it's about a sense of shared purpose and a sense of optimism and a sense of just loving your subject as well and really kind of being enthusiastic. And we try and say yes. If teachers come up with something, you know, a special project they want to do, we try and say yes. And we're also quite lucky that we have a couple of we offer some yoga to our teachers, not during, obviously, the school day. And we offer, you know, a couple of sort of strength and conditioning classes and things like that. So we try and put a few things together that teachers can share in, as well as just this sense of shared purpose, I think.
Right, stay with me. This is my Friday social. This is great. I'm loving this here. BBC Radio Solent. Four head teachers from four schools from across the south. You'll hear more from them. We're going to talk about Ofsted. We're going to talk about Senko as well. We're going to talk about Sports Day, all coming up here on BBC Radio Solent. Let me just check in on the roads for you then this afternoon. A31 partially blocked. That's around Arden's Drive. That's in Camford Bottom because of an accident there. A34, queue south Bamford Junction 9 of the M3. Bear Cross, queues on Ringwood Road from the Bear Cross roundabout and the fire station traffic lights. A35, Bridport is slow around the Crown roundabout. Portsmouth, usual delays for Kingston Road between Lake Road and Kingston Crescent and public transport. That is running pretty well. Any updates, free to call on this number, 0808 100 3800.
The home of Alan Newman at breakfast.
On Monday's show, I'm going to be looking back at an awesome weekend on the Isle of Wight. Weekdays from 6.
BBC Radio Solent.
Totally join in. I'd love to hear from you. And if you went to any of these schools, I'm sure the heads would really love to hear from you this afternoon. WhatsApp is open if you want to say hello. 0800 321 333. Put Solent at the front of your message.
Long time ago, I can still remember how that music used to make me smile. And I knew if I had my chance that I could make those people dance and maybe they'd be happy for a while. But February made me shiver with every paper I deliver.
1st of June. Lovely bit of sunshine today, into the weekend as well. We go. It's Lucy Ambash here with you till 6. You've got Solent Sport on the way from 6. And Katie Martin waking you up for Saturday breakfast here on BBC Radio Solent. But right now we are stuck in to a brilliant conversation. My Friday social this afternoon, it's a heads of school special, if you're just switching on the radio. It's been phenomenal since 3 o'clock. Really enjoying it. We've got Tim Webber, who is head teacher of Testwood School in Southampton. We've got Jane Gandy, head teacher at St Swithin School in Winchester. Sarah Holman, head teacher from Egger School in Alton. And Sharon Morton, head of Binster CAB Primary School. Right, guys, what I want to ask you is, what's it like when you're out of school and you get spotted in the streets by kids? And they go, "Hello, Mrs Holman!" Is it a nightmare?
Just to say that the last time I saw somebody outside school, they thought I hadn't seen them and they ran away and hid behind the rack of bras in Marks and Spencer's.
Is that usually what happens? Tim, do you like it being a celebrity in Southampton? Oh, there's Mr Webber there.
If only. I tend to get a very similar reaction, actually. People pretend they haven't seen me.
Yeah. What about the person that you taught years and years and years and years ago?
That's always slightly awkward when people come up to you and say, "Oh, hi, sir." And you... Yeah, obviously they've changed a lot. You teach, 200 different people a year, and you're really struggling to remember names and things like that. So you have to bluff it a bit, I'll be honest.
Yeah. Sharon, primary school, they must really change. You don't recognise them a bit, do you? You're like, I don't know who this is.
Do you know, primary is so different, particularly a small rural primary school. They see you, they come up and hug you. "Hello, Mrs. Morton, it's lovely to see you." So I was actually at Cowdrave last summer, minding my own business, and I thought, I recognise that child, but no, it's a long way from school. And then suddenly this child came bowling over, arms round me, "Hello, Mrs Morton." So it's always a nice response.
It is nice. Sarah, Eggers, I mean, you're new to Eggers, so I guess it's kind of maybe your previous schools?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's lovely to sometimes have that connection with them again, and you see them in years on, and the stories that they tell you, what they've gone on to do, and actually sometimes that's a real reminder of why we do it.
Yeah.
So they then tell, "Oh, you know, I went on to be a doctor, I went on to do great things." And sometimes you saw it, sometimes you didn't see that coming. And so actually it's an opportunity. In terms of seeing me around locally, if I'm hopefully not running red in the face or anything.
That would be embarrassing, wouldn't it?
Yeah. But I actually don't mind it. Yeah, yeah. Not a bad hair day, but I actually don't mind it.
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk about Ofsted, because there's been so much talk about Ofsted for obvious reasons, which of course, it came under scrutiny following the suicide of head teacher Ruth Perry in January 2023 at a primary school. What are your thoughts, Ofsted? How could Ofsted be improved? What are people saying about where we are with Ofsted and how it should be going forward? Tim from Testwood.
I think the main suggestion is to remove the single word judgment. That would make a big difference, I think. And if it was much more of sort of strengths and weaknesses of the school or areas for development, I think that would be a lot easier. I think at the moment it feels like quite a personal thing. It's a judgment on the head teacher rather than the school, because the two are associated. You embody the school. So I think a lot of people feel that very, very sort of personally.
But Sharon, that's a really easy way. I'm a parent.
Yeah.
Is it a good school? Is it?
Oh, it's an outstanding school.
Shimmer.
Yeah, and you're right, because what parents don't realise is that Ofsted is a snap judgment of when Ofsted are in, or if a school's been had an Ofsted 5 years ago, the staff are more different, the children are different. Schools are ever evolving. Places, then they're quite dynamic. I would agree with Tim. The main difference, I think, is it's that one word judgment, because as a head of a small school, you know, I feel it even more so, the pressure waiting. We had Ofsted in September, which is amazing, good Ofsted as it should be, but the pressure I felt as a head before that for months and months and months, the dread waking up, is it going to be Ofsted, because so much depends. I mean, that question you said in the beginning of the being, you know, the back stopped with us almost, and it's that amount of pressure that we feel as head teachers,
but
that
you've
we're
got to be inspected to know that everything's going all right. We're giving our children to you.
I have no problem with inspection whatsoever, but I think it should be a collaborative approach. I have no problem with any head coming into my school to look around, to look at my data, to see my teacher. And we actually work well within Alton Cluster. We already do that. Head teachers come into our schools. We share staff. We do that. And I don't have an issue with Ofsted per se from the DfE. But what I do have an issue on is the high stakes and that one word. As you know, unfortunately, Ruth Perry wasn't the only head teacher to commit suicide. There's been over 13 head teachers that have committed suicide in the last 10 years. We just know about her because her sister was so passionate about making the case, and of course the coroner has squarely laid the blame on Ofsted, mm-hmm. the contributing factor there. So
yeah. I mean, I should say at this point, Ofsted's chief, Sir Martin Oliver, said the body had to ensure high standards, but admitted it could be far more
yes.
empathetic.
And I did...
So has said that, and then yeah. recently concluded a consultation to identify improvements.
Yes.
So we're moving forward.
We are, and I did hear him speak at the NHT conference where he addressed a whole room of head teachers, and his move forward, I think, is good, and the idea of listening to heads is good. So let's hope he then takes it one step further and then listens to that one word judgment, because you still have the same inspection, you still have the same comments and about the quality of education, about behaviour management, about safeguarding, that would all be the same, but actually the pressure on changing someone's life on that one word judgment, and the school community, that sense of dread they feel waiting up for that.
Mm. Sarah Holman, Eggers School, talk to me about Ofsted. I mean, my mum was a teacher for 40 years.
Yes.
The dread, the shudder
yes.
that would go down her spine when Ofsted were in.
Yes.
I know that for real.
Yeah, and the waiting for it, the pressure of that cannot be underestimated. Actually, you know, when the call comes and you know this is it, it's starting, it's happening, there comes a sense of relief with that as well, because you're then going to have the opportunity to go through that process rather than sit waiting for it to happen. And we had it in February. For us, as Sharon said, we had a very positive experience, but ours actually came yeah. after there was that mental health awareness training for inspectors. And I would say that I experienced firsthand a different approach to the one that I had previously, in terms of there was the right balance between professional respect and scrutiny. There were regular check-ins on me as a head teacher. And interestingly, this time round, there was less time with me and more out and about with my colleagues and with students. And okay. so there are times during an inspection where the head teacher actually is feeling they're on their own in their office waiting and seeing what's happening out there. But I did have an experience that shows that training can make a difference. Mm-hmm. And I just wish it had come sooner for some of our colleagues.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Jane, let me ask you, because you are head teacher at St Swithin School in Winchester. So for you, Ofsted is not a thing. We've got to talk about Labour leading in the polls at the moment. So I want to ask you about school fees, an extra 20% VAT on the school fees. How worrying is this for your parents and your admissions?
I think certainly my parents are very worried about it. And I think beyond that, we should probably think about the children, because children obviously pick up on what their parents are worried about. And I think the thought of having to change school because maybe your parents can't afford the fees is a pretty tricky situation for, you know, some of our students to be in.
Hmm. Will it affect your numbers then?
It's really hard to tell.
Or would it, I should say,
yes,
not will it, would
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to tell, isn't it? A lot of our parents are sort of both parents working quite hard to afford fees. So if you think about that, then you would have to imagine that for some parents it will just become too expensive. So I think the chances are it would have an impact. And I think, you know, most independent schools will be feeling the same.
And that is 20% extra. I mean, do you swallow some of that cost, or do you pass that on to your parents, or is that this is what you're thinking about at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point. I think many independent schools will be looking to swallow some of it, at least for the first year. But I think the vast majority of us already... the sort of surplus we make as a school, we reinvest in our, you know, our facilities for the students. So we don't really have big amounts of money saved up that we could use to offset fees, to offset VAT on fees. So I think most schools might try and do it for a little bit, but you probably wouldn't be able to do it mm-hmm. forever.
How are you feeling about it? I mean, obviously you're surrounded here by secondary schools, which would be benefit. I mean, I should say, I will ask you guys in a second, that they would benefit from this mm-hmm. if this was implemented. Is this the right thing?
It's really hard to know, isn't it? Because the policy, I'm not sure how well the policy has been researched. I don't really know. There are various different bodies giving different figures about how much money it would save or how much money
well,
it would raise.
Well, 6,500 new expert teachers, spending 450 million on that. That's probably the biggest thing out of this revenue. Breakfast clubs would be free for schools. I mean, let me bring you in, Tim, Sharon, Sarah, you know, having a free breakfast club in your school, having extra teachers as well. Is this fair? Is this a fair policy that Labour are suggesting then? What do you think?
It's difficult to say it's fair. Cause obviously, there are winners and losers here. I think we probably all agree that if working in state education, that the funding is very, very tight and has been tight for a very long time. And so any extra funding, any extra resource going into the state sector is very, very welcome. But it's a very different question to say whether it should be coming from private education.
And I also think they've not really researched it properly, because at the moment, depending on where you live in the country, you get a lump sum for a child. So in Hampshire, it's roughly for primary schools just under £5,000 per pupil. At Southampton's just over £5,000 per pupil for primary, whereas actually, so the government is not paying that per child for all the children in the independent school. They're not paying that money. So if all those children actually, came into the state sector, the government would still have to find all of that money as well.
Mm.
I'm not saying it's wrong or right, but I think you need to think it through a bit further.
I mean, Sarah Eggers, you might have an intake. You might have an intake if more people couldn't afford the private schools. There's more people in your school, in Eggers.
We have certainly seen that more recently at a local level in Alton. And actually, that's a very sad story. We opened our doors straight away to those parents and those families who were actually going through a lot of anxiety about what that next stage of education would be like. They've invested a lot. They've seen a pathway ahead for their children and their education, and now that's taken away from them. So we actually took the line to be very empathetic, to open our doors and see if we could help in any way. We will be receiving new children as a result of that closure. Mm-hmm. Those children will have to transition to a different environment, and that's a big step for them. Some of them are just about to start their final year of GCSEs. So we need to focus on the children in all of this, and it's not easy.
Sports day, right? There is so much sports day going on at the moment. I want to ask you guys, what's the mum, the dad, the granddad races? Have you seen any injuries, any big competitive moments in your schools? Jane St. Swithins, you are laughing at the moment. What has happened? Have you seen mum on mum beef on the 100 metres, elbowing out the way? Tell me.
I haven't yet seen that, but we have got our sports day tomorrow.
Oh.
And for the first time, we are featuring a teacher's relay race against the sick form, so I think there's all sorts of potential for skullduggery, false starts, all sorts going on.
Tim, Testwood School, I mean, it's a competitive day. How does Testwood step up to the plate?
We've got our sports day next week.
Have you?
Yes, we have. I'm quite anxious about the staff race, if I'm honest.
Oh, staff race!
We don't want people getting injured, and then, there's potential for that. What we do, it's a fine balance, really, because there are some students for whom, they really excel at sports and on sports day, and that is their moment, and that's really important. But also, it needs to be inclusive. It needs to feel like everybody can take part and enjoy sports day. So we try and find that balance right. We're always trying to get that balance right. Mm-hmm. And the other thing you have to contend with always is the weather.
Yeah.
And that can drive a coach and horses through your best laid plans.
Yeah, Sharon,
ours should have been next week, but we're through to the county cricket. Our girl cricketers, we're very strong on cricket instead.
Cool.
Yeah, but what we do actually, similar to what Tim was saying, is we have some activities around carousel. So the house points are rather individual, as well as those individual races. But the race that always amuses me is the dad's race, because they get so competitive and they're thundering down there. And I've just got to get way out of the way.
Sarah, let me ask you to change the subject then, because I quickly want to mention this. SENCO, are you seeing a rise in SEND support, so special education needs and disabilities, at Eggers School in Alton?
We certainly are, and I think everybody would say the same. We're also seeing a change, perhaps in as a result of that parental expectation, and we're in a situation, I would say, where we're very much managing children, but also managing parents and families and external agencies, and trying to navigate a world in terms of special educational needs that's become quite complicated. We were talking earlier, before coming into the show, just about how it used to look and now how it is in terms of understanding what the children's needs are and the expectations of us to be able to meet those needs.
Tim, Testwood?
Yes, I mean, we've definitely seen an increase. And I suspect, as well as our better understanding of students' needs and student learning, I think it's also, there is a factor where COVID has had an impact as well, in terms of mislearning, but also development of skills and things like that. So it's a combination of factors, but yeah, definitely an increased need.
Primary school, Sharon?
Yeah, absolutely. A huge increase in special needs. And with that, a decrease in funding. Actually, mm-hmm. Funding is pushed to the limit for all of our schools. And the issue is, you have children who have genuine needs, and getting that support for those children.
They say school funding is its highest ever level in real terms per pupil, and there are record numbers of teachers. 27,000, more than 2010.
It depends which statistics you use, because if you look at other statistics, it shows that actually school funding is the lowest since 2010. So it's all about depends which way you look at statistics, but all I can say is since I've been ahead, I've noticed the increase in special needs and the decrease in amount of money to support those children coming in.
Yeah. Okay. I've really loved it. Thank you so much. Before you go, what does a head teacher do at the weekend? Sarah Holman of Eggers School, what do you get up to at the weekend?
Remember that you have a family. Remember,
see you.
Not so much in the week, but I think certainly making dedicated time to be with my boys. I'm really lucky to have a lovely family around me, and really making sure that in our calendar we've got things to look forward to. Walking, getting out in the fresh air, doing things that are good for the soul, and just making sure that movie night, it's on the calendar. We're all there and looking forward to it.
Sharon, 2-hour walk on South Downs on Saturday.
Yeah,
every
Saturday.
Get your walking boots on.
I do it with a friend. We go for a walk and a talk and put the world to rights, mm-hmm. and for 2 hours. So
Jane, work does not stop for Jane of St Swithin's, Winchester, because now she is off to, where are you going off to, Jane?
I'm going to the TES, the Times Educational Supplement Awards, because we've been shortlisted for an award for EdTech, Educational Technology.
Okay, and then at the weekend you've got Sports Day, haven't you?
Tomorrow, yes, that is correct.
After. Are you running in anything, Jane? Because I know you're a runner.
Maybe.
Tim, what about you? Tim of Testwood, where do we see you? Oh, you're a Saints fan. Do you go to the matches?
Oh, yeah, I'm a season ticket holder.
Do you see your pupils?
I do see pupils there. That's
like,
nice.
What is Mr. Webber doing here? Shouting at the players.
I have to mind my P's and Q's.
Yeah,
absolutely. Cycling is my sort of outlet. I really enjoy a good cycle on a Sunday morning. And going to see Nile Rodgers on Sunday evening.
At the sessions, Guildhall.
That's very good.
Wow. Thank you so much. It's been fascinating, interesting to learn about you, to learn about your schools, to learn about your vision as well. And thank you so much, Tim Webber, there, head teacher of Testwood School, Southampton. Jane Gandy, head teacher of St Swithin's in Winchester. Sarah Holman, head teacher of Eggers in Alton, and Sharon Morton, head teacher of Binstead C of E Primary School. Thank you so much
for being here.
Thank you. Yeah, on BBC Radio Solent for the Friday Social. Let me know if you enjoyed that. Get in touch if you like on WhatsApp 08000 321 333. Put Solent at the front of your message, or give us a call 0808 100 3800. Love that.